and welcome to Radio Prague's weekend program with me, Jan Richter. Thank you for joining us. Coming up in today's show, we look at how the Czech National Heritage Institute is planning to attract more visitors to some of the most beautiful castles and chateaus in a new edition of Czech history. Then we talk to a Brno-based board games designer, Vlada Chvátil. And later, we bring back our popular miniseries from the archives, so please stay tuned for all of that. But first, the Czech Republic is sometimes called the land of castles and chateaus. For historic reasons, many of those monuments are owned by the state and run by the National Heritage Institute, including some of the most beautiful ones as Lednice, Český Krumlov and Karlštejn. To attract more visitors to the beautiful castles under its administration, the institute this week opened an information center in Prague. I spoke to Tomáš Brabec from the institute and asked him what information visitors can find there.
The new information center, which the National Heritage Institute has opened yesterday in the very center of Prague, is actually having two functions. First of all, it's supposed to provide visitors and people who generally like the national heritage in terms of Czech Republic, you know, we speak mainly about castles, you know, and chateaus. They can find there all updated information about the cultural program that we carry out, you know, on a collection of more than 90 buildings all around the country. Plus, they can find there literature and some other items which are related to what the National Heritage Institute is doing.
Will the center or is the center foreign-friendly? What languages are available in the center?
We were actually selecting a brand new staff, you know, for this information center. So we are so far supposed to cover the biggest language groups, you know, coming to Prague, which is the German-speaking visitor, you know, and the English-speaking visitor. But you know, in the future, and this is a question because it's a very new activity, you know, and our organization is having a very little experience, you know, with such a kind of service. We would like probably, you know, to meet the language requests, you know, if you can say so, of the Russian group, which is definitely rising. I'm rather skeptic, you know, about some of the Asian languages because, you know, we have to admit one fact, and it is that it's less than 10% of the total number of visitors of our castles, which is recruited, you know, from the visitors from abroad. So we are still mainly focused on the local clients.
Why is the Institute doing this? Do you think that people don't have enough information about what's going on at the monuments that you administer, that you run?
The main reason is that the National Heritage Institute is in charge of, as I already said, you know, more than 90 historical buildings, but predominantly spread all around the country. And what we are desperately missing, you know, is a place where people would have, a concentrated access to our activities and information about them in the very heart of the country, which is the capital, which is Prague. Here, you know, we are running only one place, which are the historical gardens under Prague Castle, but there is simply no other location where people can find sources of information about our activities and our agenda. And the second thing is that in the past, you know, we simply had no tool in hands how to address directly the foreign visitors. In this field, we mainly cooperate, you know, with the Czech Tourism as a national agency, which is supposed to promote Czech Republic abroad. But National Heritage Institute itself had a very limited possibilities, you know, how to address these people directly. And this is, you know, what we hope is going to work a little better.
Do you have any kind of idea what impact, in terms of perhaps numbers of visitors, the new center should have?
That's a very hard question, and as I already said, you know, in this very moment, we are running the new information center, you know, in something like a testing mode, and we would like really to figure out throughout the summer holiday time what would be the expectations, you know, of our clients and the clients of the information center first, and second, you know, what kind of other tools and strategies, you know, we can simply apply in terms of addressing to the people from outside of Czech Republic.
You said that only 10% of your total visitors is made up of foreigners. Why do you think that is?
It's a very simple answer for that. You know, we have to look at the map of Czech Republic, and I think that we can quite easily see what is the distribution of these historical buildings around the country. And then, you know, if you take under consideration such effects like the popularity of the regional destinations, disregarding Prague, you know, these are not that many. It's very hard, for instance, you know, to attract foreigners, you know, to travel east from Prague, you know. It's a very hard thing, you know, and we believe that this is one of the ways how we can do that.
What can people see when they come to one of the monuments? Is it a lifestyle exhibition about what people, owners or whoever, used to live like?
This is, I think, the exact moment that we can relatively easily describe as one of the main competitive advantages of the Czech national heritage comparing to the other European countries. Because if you look at the collection of these castles that we are talking about, what makes them special and unique is that in most of the cases, they are still fully equipped, you know, with the original furniture and with the original furbishing that was there, you know, when the private owners were using these places, you know, either as a places for the permanent living, you know, or something like a summer houses, you know, if you wish to use this term. So this is, you know, what a visitor can really experience there, you know. It's like a step back in time. And this is, I think, one of the very strong philosophies of National Heritage Institute, that we are trying, you know, to show these places, you know, as if the owners left the place just 1 hour before you came there.
An interesting question that comes to mind. You said that some of the castles or some of the furnishings of the castles and chateaus are presented in a way to make them look as if the owners had left an hour ago. The owners did leave, not an hour ago, 60 years ago, because of all kinds of political reasons. And some of them, of course, sued or still suing the Czech Republic to get their former property back. Do you have a policy, like a general policy in place to explain how you came to administer these objects?
I think that the position of our organization, which is really administrating, you know, these buildings, because it is a state, you know, Czech Republic is the owner, is very much open. You know, we are, of course, not hiding, you know, the way how the state took over these places. We are explaining, you know, to our visitors how it happened, what were the historical circumstances, you know, of that. Very often, you know, it happened before the Second World War. It's just not only case, you know, of what happened at the end of the war. These are things, you know, which simply happen for us. You know, it's a one stage of the history of the place, which is in most of the cases about 300 years, you know, and more.
In 2011, the numbers of visitors dropped slightly. However, the revenues were higher for the National Heritage Institute. Are you planning any kind of new innovative ways of raising money? For example, in Spain, some of the monuments serve as hotels run by... Is that a way to go for you?
Most probably not. First of all, this is not our role to run a profitable commercial project. And we would certainly not substitute the private investors and private organizations which are running and hotels, you know, and providing other commercial services.
Among the top most visited monuments, of course, is Český Krumlov and Karlštejn. What do you think is the most sort of underrated monument? Which is the monument that you would recommend people to see, which is perhaps not as well known?
If we would like to stay in the center Bohemian region, which is the circle around Prague, we can find there, for instance, such a place like a Chateau Mníšek pod Brdy, which is one of the best presented historical building in the collection of National Heritage Institute, which is offering a lot to visitors of different age groups, including children, you know, and families, which is one of the strongest trends of this period, that most of these services are now trying to focus, you know, on the families. And I think that this is actually one of the good examples, you know, that we can talk about. But it's not the only one, because if you look at the Northern Bohemia, which is something like a black sheep of the family among the Czech regions, at least, you know, in terms of tourism, and doesn't matter whether we speak about the international or the local, the Czech tourism, there are also, you know, many very interesting buildings, you know, that are simply totally disregarded. And we can talk about Chateau Duchcov. It's probably a long-term run, you know, to present the castles, you know, in a way that would be efficient in terms of attracting people, you know, who are now, of course, you know, having a big choice. It's not like it was 20 years ago when a visit of a castle was almost a must. And it was one of the, even economically, relatively affordable activities, you know, for the free time. But now people, you know, they can spend their free time, you know, in the sport matches and hundreds of cultural events all around the year, which is, of course, a competition, you know, to the castles.
I was talking there to Tomáš Brabec from the Czech National Heritage Institute. Coming up next, Jan Wellinger looks at the life of an internationally recognized board games designer, Vlada Chvátil.
When it comes to game designers, you'd be hard-pressed to find one more successful in recent years than the Czech Republic's Vlada Chvátil. 6 years or so ago, the Brno-based designer made his mark with the Civilization board game called Through the Ages, and since he has produced a slew of successes, including titles like Space Alert, where players have to cooperate aboard a space vessel in trouble, to his newest game, released by the U.S. company WizKids, called Mage Knight. It's a niche hobby, but within it, the designer has earned international recognition and success. As a student, Chvátil studied computer programming, and his thesis project was a computer game design. As a professional, it's no surprise then that he first made his mark in the video games market. But the drive to design board games, he says, was always there, projects he came up with for kids in what was the equivalent of a local scout chapter. The Brno Games Club, which goes back 20 years or so, has also always been a touchstone for projects, then and today, where new games are tried and tested by the designer, acquaintances and friends. Vlada Chvátil himself told me more on a line from Brno.
For me, the Brno Games Club is very important. It is a place where I meet with people that play games with my friends, and it is much more fun to create games for people I know and to see their reactions and so on. That's for me personally, definitely, it's important.
In hobby gaming, there are two main schools of design. So-called Euros, games with shorter playing times and shorter rule sets that emphasize strategy over luck, and the American school, or Ameritrash, as it has come to be known in recent years, offering more complex narratives, longer rules and play times, and more immersive play. An example of a now classic Euro would be Germany's answer to Monopoly, The Settlers of Catan, which has sold more than 15 million copies worldwide since 1995 and has been translated into 30 languages. A famous American school title, though designed by Italian designers, might be War of the Ring, where Tolkien's hobbits make the difficult way to the land of Mordor while hordes of plastic armies of orcs and trolls sweep across the board. In terms of design styles, Vlada Chvátil admits he falls somewhere in between, combining elements of both.
I am kind of between these two directions, or two styles. I'm not the only designer that is between them. I think that these two styles are influencing each other, and it is visible that new Amateurish games have much more Euro mechanics. But I'm going a bit different way, because instead of adding Euro mechanics to American games or American style games, I am rather incorporating the rich theme and maybe some bigger complexity to Euro games. I like indirect interaction. Yeah, the goal for a player has to be to do actions that he benefits from, and not actions that screw other players. That's, for me, much more positive type of interaction than just, now I will attack him and destroy his building or something like this.
Hvakil, as a designer, often relies on fantasy or science fiction themes for his games, and the reason is not just because they are popular among game geeks.
I always try to have a theme in the game very strong, and because I want the players to have some unique experience when playing the game, I always try in my games that the players can immerse into the game world. You can do something very epic. It is very difficult to do a game about conquering countries or exploring countries in our real setting, because all is explored here and so on, and you have to stick to historical facts. Fantasy or science fiction allows you to tailor the setting exactly to your needs and to the desired game format.
Creating intricate games, which can take anywhere from 1 to 4 hours to play, requires numerous skills, in which an understanding of mathematics and statistical probabilities doesn't hurt. Games can present simple to increasingly complex situations where players have to make both entertaining but also tricky choices. The narrative may be simple on paper and may play smoothly, such as an adventure in a fantasy world traveling through the land and gaining knowledge and power, like in Mage Knight, not unlike World of Warcraft Online. But the implementation is what can take many different forms, all of which have to balance out and have to be tested relentlessly. When it comes to concrete designs, creating a coherent world with its own consistent internal logic is no easy task. And after that, there are many hundreds of hours of playtesting among different groups before the game is released. Blaga Hvakil again.
Relief, because, and this is the same with video gaming industry and gaming industry, when you are creating a game, it is different from creating other product, because you can always improve it, yeah? You can always make it a bit better, and this leads to the fact that you are working on it to the very last minute, trying to do it as good as possible, and it has to go to printer this morning, and it is 5 o'clock at morning, and we still are changing some small details on the game and so on, and in the texts, and there are several sleepless nights because of that. Oh, and when then the game goes to printer, and you can say done, yeah. Then you see, I usually am a bit afraid for some times, because as you have said, my games are rather complex, and I always have some feeling, okay, maybe I went too far this time and people won't buy it, and people consider this too complex and so on. And then first reaction appears, and if there are positives, then I am really relieved that it worked again. And when some enthusiastic response appears, that I say, okay, these many hundreds of hours and sleepless night were worth it.
At 40, Hvakil is not just a designer. He is also the co-founder of the successful Czech publisher Czech Games Edition, which has released a number of his own games, but also titles by newer up-and-coming talents. Still, he himself isn't giving up design anytime soon. He's always enjoyed making games for people to play. In recent years, as more and more innovative designs have emerged, and as some colleges and universities offer game design now in their curriculum, it has also become a common discussion in game forums to scope whether games can be art. Certainly there are elements that the two share, aesthetics and presentation, from cover art to card and board illustration, and also there are narrative elements. Hvakil, though, sees games design more as craft. For him, there's at least one important distinction.
That really depends on how you define the word art. For me, games are more, let's say, craft with some artistic maybe aspects. I believe that commonly perceived meaning of art is that it goes from some inner needs of the artist, yeah, and he expresses something he wants to express. The fact that people then like it and admire it is not necessarily not the primary target. While when I am talking about this creative craft, what I am doing is to think about my audience in the first place. So I am trying to do games that people will like. And I think that's not what's exactly called art with the capital A. It is definitely creative work. I think you can do art just because you want to create art and you need to create art, and to ignore whether someone will like it or not, but it is not the case of board games.
Vlaga Chvakil has come a long way since his title Through the Ages, a civilization-building board game that was inspired by Sid Meier's famous video game, which made headlines in gaming circles and won numerous awards and accolades. Although he says he has other designs he favors, this is probably the one that made the biggest difference in terms of his career, and it also helped put Czech game design on the map. Vlaga Chvakil again.
If you publish successful game and a game that players appreciate, then you get recognized by them and they are curious what next you will do, and you have much more opportunities. And also, it was, I believe, very good that it was published by a company named Czech Board Games, because it also make a Czech Republic visible as a country that can produce games. And it was really nice to read when next year we went to Essen Show, the biggest board game fair in Europe, to read, I'm curious what those crazy Czechs created again, and so on.
Since then, other designers like Vladimir Suchý, author of Last Will, and Jiří Mikuláš, author of Space Bastards, have joined the growing number of names from the Czech Republic to watch, and Vlaga too remains one of the best. Just this week, his latest title, Mage Knight, was named Game of the Year by GameShark.com, and it would be surprising if it didn't make additional best-of lists.
That edition of Czech Life by Jan Wellinger was first broadcast in January this year. Now, a rerun of our popular miniseries From the Archives by David Vaughan.
In the second half of the 1980s, the sweeping reforms in the Soviet Union were being echoed in several of the country's Eastern Bloc satellites. But in Czechoslovakia, there were few signs of change, despite growing diplomatic pressure from abroad. A key moment came in December 1988, when President François Mitterrand made the first ever official trip to Czechoslovakia by a French head of state. This was part of a broader attempt to improve dialogue with communist countries, but Mitterrand also came with a clear human rights agenda. Just before his trip, he was interviewed by Czechoslovak radio. I shall be meeting with various representatives of your society, including your political life in all its diversity, including the opposition. I shall express myself freely, with the respect that a state and a people deserve, and I am hoping that current positive trends will accelerate. At the moment, exchanges between our countries are poor in all fields. They could be much richer. During the visit, and much to the annoyance of Czechoslovakia's communist leaders, the French president had an unprecedented breakfast meeting at the French embassy with eight Charter 77 dissident activists, including Václav Havel. Mitterrand returned home on December 10, 1988, which coincided with Human Rights Day. To mark the event, 3,000 people attended a demonstration on the Prague Square Škropovo náměstí, appealing for a greater recognition of human rights. Coming so soon after such a high-profile visit, the demonstration was allowed to go ahead, for the first time in nearly two decades. But just 5 weeks later, riot police were out in the streets again with water cannon. It was the 20th anniversary of the death of Jan Palach, the student who had set himself alight on Prague's Wenceslas Square in protest against public apathy after the Soviet-led invasion in August 1968. For a whole week, in mid-January 1989, thousands of people attended demonstrations to remember Palach's sacrifice and appealing for democratic reform. The police, politicians and the official media showed little sign of the greater tolerance that the French president's visit had seemed to herald. Here is an extract from one of Czechoslovak radio's reports on the demonstrations, steeped in the official jargon of the time.
Předsednictvo ústředního výboru komunistické strany Československa se na dnešním zasedání zabývalo řadou otázek vnitřní politiky.
The presidium of the Central Committee of the Communist Party of Czechoslovakia met today to discuss a number of issues, including the situation created by attempted anti-state demonstrations. It praised attempts by communists, members of other political parties and non-party members to maintain calm and order. It expressed its support for law enforcers and for the people's militia. It praised their political awareness and discipline.
Ocenilo jejich politickou uvědomělost a vysokou kázeň.
But the genie had been let out of the bottle. The scale of the demonstrations had boosted the confidence of those campaigning for reform. 5 months later, the petition known as Několik Vět, A Few Sentences, was launched by Charter 77 activists, calling for greater political openness and the release of political prisoners. By the end of July 1989, over 10,000 people had signed, and by the end of the year, the regime had fallen.
That edition of From the Archives by David Vaughan brings us to the end of today's show. You're always happy to get your comments and questions, so do get in touch. The address is Vinohradská 12, 12099 Prague 2, and you can also send us an email at english@radio.cz. We appreciate all of them. But now, from me, Jan Richter, and all of us here at Radio Prague, thank you very much for listening, and goodbye.